the Mental Breakdown. I'm Dr. Bernie.
I'm Dr. Richard.
And we're
It's Friday,
so we must be recording. We're a little bit later than usual. For those of you who like to listen on Mixlr, we're a little bit later than usual because I had to go have blood drawn this morning. And man, that was not an enjoyable experience. I don't like having blood drawn.
Now, you're going to scare the audience. Now, just all those phlebotomists out there are going to hate you.
Well, it's never a good sign when you hold your arm out and she's feeling your arm and she says, "Where are your veins?"
I left them at the office.
That's never a good start.
They're in my other shirt.
Oh, my gosh. And so she had to dig around and find it in one arm. And then undoubtedly, I ran out of blood in that arm. And then she had to search for one in the other arm. So,
you need a new food plan if you don't have veins.
I don't know. You know what? My body just runs off of it naturally. I don't need veins.
That's right. I don't need blood either.
So that's why we're a little bit late today. But we're happy to be here, and we are happy to be talking about this topic today.
And this probably comes under the heading of TMI.
TMI? What, the blood? The
yes,
blood stuff?
Your blood loss.
Look,
it's probably more information than our listeners wanted to hear.
You know, well,
they're going to hear more.
Okay, let's talk about this for a second. You know, the worst thing about giving blood or any real medical procedure is anticipatory anxiety. You know, you're sitting there.
I'll give you that.
And you're anxious because, my goodness, there is that bin there with all of those needles in it, and she pulls it out, and the needle is, you know, 15 feet long.
That's right.
You know,
it's a 3-foot needle.
And she's like, "I'm going to put this in your arm, and then connect this water hose that's going to drain every bit of fluid out of your body." So you have all this anticipatory anxiety. It doesn't hurt itself, well, unless I think she hit a bone. But
I'm sorry that I elicited yet more information about his blood loss this morning. I think we'll just proceed to our podcast.
It was a traumatic experience, but I lived through it, and here I am to tell the tale once again.
I'll hold his hand today to make sure he's okay.
What's good is I only have to do that once a year or so. Yeah, it was. I'm glad it's over though. I've been stressing about it all week. My hands were getting sweaty before as I was sitting there in the waiting room. So anyways,
I'm doing all I can on the other side of the table to get him started.
All right. So, but what are we going to, it goes into
speaking
a little bit
of,
about what
of,
we're going to talk about today.
That's right. It is so, relevant to today's podcast.
That's right. Okay. So we have started out this year talking about working to get us started off on the right foot for the new year and getting things going where we need them to be to live the life that we want to live. Because that's, you know, if there is a meaning of life, the meaning of life is live the life that makes you happy.
Right.
Okay? And whether that means, whatever that means, whether that means to be a physician or that means to be a surf bum, whatever the meaning of life is to you, whatever makes you happy is what you do. So we started out encouraging all of our listeners to make goals instead of resolutions. Resolutions almost implicitly suggest that you're not going to succeed.
Right.
So make goals and not resolutions. The second thing we talked about is happiness. You know, we need to be happy. How do we find happiness? And we talked about that last week with that 50-40-10 division of where happiness comes from. Today, or probably, to be realistic, over the next couple of podcasts, we're going to talk about some of the specific obstacles that get in the way of us succeeding at our goals and finding happiness.
Right.
Okay? We're going to go through them pretty specifically because we want to provide you with some recommendations and some ways to think about it. These are almost going to be, if you will, these will be therapy sessions for us. What do you think about that?
Okay.
That'll be good. And so let's sort of set the stage for what we'll be talking about over the next couple of weeks. Richard, when we were sitting down in show prep this morning, we were talking about this list of obstacles, primary obstacles that we get. And I know that I came up with a couple right away that in my mind, boom, these are major obstacles. Right. But you came up with a couple of fantastic ones that I hadn't even thought of. So let's go through the list. We have five big categories. And the first one is stopping old habits. You know, when we want to make changes in our life or when we want to set new goals, one of the things we typically have to do is stop bad habits, stop old habits that we've been doing for so long. So we're going to talk about that. Another one is motivation. Now, motivation is a fantastic topic. We've talked about motivation before. And if you remember, for those of you who've been listening to the podcast regularly, you know that next Thursday, January 21st, here in our office, we are going to be doing a workshop, a two-hour workshop on motivation, how to create motivation. So we may save that topic for next week just to kind of build on what we talk about in that Thursday night workshop.
Right.
The third big obstacle was, this was one that you mentioned, and Richard, I didn't even think about it, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah, because it happened to me. You know, we're doing this. You and I have been working on our food plans, and
right.
We don't call them diets. We call it how we're planning our foods, and you reach these plateaus, regardless of what you're doing, whether it's learning a new sport. You know, the learning curve is pretty steep. You learn pretty fast, and then suddenly you reach a plateau.
Right.
Whether you're dieting, you're trying to lose weight, whether you're trying to learn a new skill, whether you're trying to change some old habit and develop a new habit, eventually you reach a point where you feel like you're plateauing.
Right.
And, you know, let's take diet, because I think everybody's used to that. So you've lost 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 pounds. Things are going really well. And suddenly you stop making progress.
Yeah.
And it's at that point that people get discouraged and they go back to their comfort zone. They go back to eating it because they get discouraged and they say, what's the use? I might as well eat what I want. All this sacrifice, all this giving up, all this denial isn't really getting me anything. So I'm going to give up.
Right.
So how do you manage? And that becomes an obstacle to achieving your goals, is what do you do when you reach those plateaus?
Yeah, because the plateaus are bound to happen.
They're going to happen.
They're going to happen.
Right. Yeah, you're not going to lose steadily. You're going to lose, and then you're going to stop, and you're going to lose, you're going to stop.
Right. And so you have to prepare for them. And so that's going to be another major obstacle issue that we will talk about.
Right.
The fourth is another one that you had mentioned, Richard, and that is figuring out your comfort zone.
Right.
You know, what are you comfortable with? You know, I always find it interesting, you know, and not that this was going to be the main focus for today's, but I always find it interesting when a person says, I want to be a physician when I grow up. And I say, oh, well, you know, tell me about, you know, this is maybe a teenager or something. Tell me what you like in school. Oh, well, I hate science and math. I just can't understand it. No matter how hard I try, I can't get it. And I often find my response in those situations, what you know, to be a physician is going to require a heck of a lot of math and science.
Right.
And they almost seem surprised.
Right.
You know, people who kids that we meet and work with who absolutely hate school. You have some of those patients, right?
I do.
They hate school. Mm-hmm. Then when you ask them, what are you going to do after high school, the first thing they say is go to college.
Go to college. Well, you know, I hate school, so I'm going to go to college and do it some more.
Right. So we need to talk about where your comfort zone is.
Yeah. And when you're talking about change, about going to a new place, setting a new goal, learning something new, you're going to – two things you have to overcome. One is you have to leave your comfort zone.
Right.
That becomes an obstacle, is how do you leave the place where you are? Because you've grown accustomed to that. That's your comfort zone. So how do you leave that behind? And then the second thing is you have to get accustomed to the new comfort zone, because
right.
you're going to put yourself in another place. We used to see that with young children who were trying to lose weight. And they would be very successful for several weeks. And then as their bodies started to change, they started to get compliments from family members and even peers.
Yeah.
And the peers would say, oh, man, you look fantastic. You look really great. And suddenly they felt a whole new set of expectations.
Right.
They were completely out of their comfort zone, because now all of a sudden, for the first time in their lives, somebody's noticing how good they look rather than how large they look or how fat they look.
Or how unsatisfied they are with how they look. Right.
And suddenly they panic and they go back to the old ways. They inadvertently, they don't even realize they're doing it, they rush back to the old ways. They start eating again so they can get back to what they were accustomed to being before they started the diet.
Right. Yeah. Right. So you have to find what is your comfort zone. And sometimes that's a therapeutic process. I mentioned at the beginning that this was almost going to be like a therapy session today. Mm-hmm. But that is very much a focus of some of our therapeutic work with people is you got to figure out who you are.
Right.
Because who you are, what you're comfortable with, that's going to guide and that's going to, in many ways, dictate your success or failure.
Mm-hmm. What people forget, I mean, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with this. There's a reason why you look the way you do. I mean, there is a reason. We may not know what it is.
Right.
I may not know why I gained 20 pounds, but there's some reason for that. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I need to go in and take a look at that. And that's what you mean by the therapeutic process.
Right.
How'd you get here?
Right. Okay?
And if you figure out how you got there, then you can handle these obstacles, the inevitable things that are going to get in the way and send you back to where you just came from.
Right, because that is what's going to happen, is if it's not putting you in your comfort zone, you're going to go back to the old habits.
And you're not the only one struggling with this urge to go back. You mentioned, I don't know, well, we did a talk last night. You may have mentioned it in the talk about...
Oh, that was a great talk last night.
Yeah, we did a talk on ADHD.
In Lake Wells, yeah. Right. It was great.
And you mentioned this notion of we all face this urge to go back to our comfort zone and all the things that drag you back to that, and that you can't just rely on willpower.
Right.
Remember that you talked about that. Yeah, you mentioned it last night, that we have a finite amount of willpower, and it's not just a question of using your willpower to accomplish these things. Because willpower alone probably isn't going to be sufficient.
Right.
And we want listeners, please understand, you're not the only one struggling with this.
Right.
We all do.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, willpower is definitely a finite resource.
And it's not the solution.
Right.
Yeah. Because then you beat yourself up. Then you become too self-critical. You say, well, I don't have the willpower to... It's not a willpower issue.
Right. And then as soon as you get discouraged, then all these other obstacles of motivation and all these other things come into play and really mess you up. So
we've talked about four.
There's four of them.
Okay. Now, one is stopping the old habit.
Right.
One is a lack of motivation.
Yep.
Insufficient motivation.
Right.
One is dealing with plateaus, and one is leaving your comfort zone.
Right. And that leaves us number five.
Number five
is the focus of today's podcast. And number five is... fear. And we're not talking about fear like anxiety fear per se. We're not talking about the physiological response of the fight or flight type of thing. But I heard this quote once, and I tried to look it up and see who it's most attributed to, but I can't really find who the first person to say it was. But I love it, and I feel like I try to live by this. And the quote is, we need to forget to be afraid. Now, if we let that sort of soak in just a little bit, forget to be afraid. And the way that fear interferes with our ability to meet our goals and to become the person that we want to, it is multifaceted. Okay? We are afraid of failure. We are afraid of success. We are afraid of ridicule. Mm-hmm. And many times, we're afraid of the change itself. What is this going to mean? You mentioned the kids that we worked with before who were losing weight. Okay, if I lose weight and I become more physically active,
right.
Mm-hmm. Now there's a new set of demands on me that I'm going to have to meet.
Right.
And I'm kind of afraid of that. Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit intimidated by that. And so we need to forget to be afraid. Mm-hmm. Because when we forget to be afraid, then we are able to push ourselves through to meet and meet ourselves, become who we are. And so let's talk about these just a little bit. The fear of failure. Mm-hmm. All right. That is not, that to anybody listening should not be a revolution, a revelation, not a revolution. We're not going around in circles. It's a revelation. It shouldn't be a revelation. we know that we're afraid of failure. And in fact, that fear of failure is what keeps us from doing most of the things that we're doing. That's why we're talking about it, number one. Richard and I met in 2002. I was a graduate student at the University of South Florida, and he was a lowly school psychologist Polk County, Florida, and I needed a internship. I needed a pre-doctoral internship, and if I remember the story correctly, I approached Polk County Schools and said that I was interested in an internship, and I was interested in neuropsych and all the things that I was interested in. They said, well, we got the guy you should talk to, Dr. Richard Marshall. I said, all right, I'll talk to him. So I went to meet with him. If I remember the story right, Richard, you met with me, though you had no intentions of taking on an intern.
I didn't want to. I didn't want the responsibility of doing that.
Right. So we met, and I think I remember one of the things that happened that turned the corner, and if I remember right with this too, it had to do with substance P. Substance P is a neurochemical in our body that's released many times when we eat spicy foods and different things. And in our conversation, because believe it or not, even over the ensuing 14 years, these are the kinds of discussions that we have just sitting around talking about substance P and those kinds of things. But when I mentioned substance P, I remember your face and you're like, you know about substance P?
That's right. You weren't supposed to know that.
And from then on, I think that we hit it off and we have, I would consider you my best friend.
You should.
Well, of course I do. I mean,
okay.
So that was a long story to say that. So we've been working very closely together since 2002. We have, since that time, talked about starting a private practice.
Right.
We wanted to have our own practice. We've written 5 business plans. We have imagined it. We've talked about it. We have drawn pictures of it. We have done
some
things.
I forgot about some of that stuff. We did. I have a folder about the business plan.
I still have a file on my external hard drive.
So this is like a little confession here.
Yeah, well, I told you it's therapy.
Oh,
it's therapy.
Okay. I get nervous in therapy.
But so in 2014, March of 2014, we finally opened the doors to our private practice. 12 years
later.
After, and we had talked about
everything we could to avoid
to avoid it.
Doing what we wanted to do.
Exactly. And what has made me insane about this is that we talked about it. We knew what we wanted. I mean, we had the perfect. We had it all perfectly mapped out in our heads. I was an assistant professor after graduate school. I became an assistant professor at USF. You were an associate professor at USF. Mm-hmm. We tried to do some part time stuff here and there, but we were afraid to. I know I was. I'll speak for myself.
We both, yeah.
I was afraid to let go of that security because to stop working for the University of South Florida, you know, for lack of a better term, that's a government job. You know, I was working for the state. I had good health insurance. I had it was stable. My department chair seemed to really like me, so he was cool with me, and you know.
Yeah, that was a good position.
Yeah, it was. Don't say it like that.
I don't know why you left?
It was a great position, and I really loved it. There were lots of things that I hated about it. You know, I'm not going. It wasn't all roses. There were a lot of things that I really found frustrating, but I liked that position. But I was so anxious to give up that security.
Mm-hmm.
Then in 2008, I ended up taking the dive and I left the university, but I joined another very stable
mm-hmm.
practice,
right.
Private practice, mm-hmm. Here in Polk County. And I went there. Again, there was it was sort of a baby step.
Mm-hmm.
because I was getting out into private practice, but it was there was much more security because there were several psychologists already in the practice that were well established, and they could send me patients and stuff like that. What I found, of course, not of course, but found luckily, is that I was able to grow my own reputation and practice very quickly. But it still took us 6 years
from there to here.
To start our own practice. And even during that whole time, we were in communication and we were talking about this. So that was a long, I feel better. It was cathartic. It was.
It's what therapy does that.
I'm telling that story because even for us who
we know better.
We right. work with patients. We tell patients, you got to take the jump. You know, there's that great Steve Harvey video out now. You can find it on Facebook and around where he's talking about you got to jump. He has a lot of religious undertones to it. But even if you're not a religious person, it's absolutely true. At some point, you just have to do it. Mm-hmm. And in I remember in early 2014, I was about to turn 40 years old, and I told myself, this has to be the year. I've got to do it this year.
Okay.
And 3 months later, we opened doors to Psychological Associates of Central Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to get to the point where we say, and we tell ourselves to forget to be afraid. We just have to do it. And sure, there's risks, and sure, it needs to be calculated, and sure, you have to think about all of the potential ramifications of that decision. But it comes down, you just have to overcome that fear of failure.
You know, and one of the things that we found out, and I think this probably applies to most of these things, is that once you make the decision and you actually take those first steps, eventually you learn how to do this. You don't know how to run a business when you first start it. You learn how to
run it. Or 2 years later.
Right.
You're still not sure what you're doing.
Well, you keep discovering things.
You know? Right.
And so, but you learn as you move along. And
right.
so nobody expects you to be successful at the beginning of the process.
Right.
It takes a long time to be sick. And there are many things to be afraid of, but you can't, of course, and we all are. That's what we're saying to you about this, about our starting our own private practice. We had the same fear.
Right.
But you have to overcome that fear. Know that everybody does.
Right.
Okay. Everybody has that fear of failure, but you can't let that stop you
right.
from taking these steps toward your goal. You have to take the steps. As you take the steps, you'll become more capable of taking the remaining steps.
Right.
But you have to start with those first few.
Right. And you know, when you do it in a calculated and mindful
yeah.
way,
right.
you surround yourself with the people that you know are going to be able to help you. And so
right.
you find this resource and you find that resource. And what is amazing, and I think one of the things that really pushed me over the edge as far as just doing it,
right.
is I kept finding all these reasons not to.
That's right.
And the big one that was stopping me was I can't, you know, when you're first starting, you can't afford an assistant.
Right.
And I'm like, there's no way that I can see all the patients that I need to see, do all the things that I need to do, and schedule all my own appointments and everything.
Right.
And I found therapy appointment, which
right.
is the program that we use, which is a fantastic program. For any of you who are licensed mental health counselors or clinical practitioners out there, it's a wonderful program that really does everything for you, very affordable. This isn't a plug for them, though we are looking for advertisers, I guess I could say.
Yes, yeah. Come on board.
But you know, I found that, and it was like, okay, there's no more excuses.
And that's what I mean about you're going to find a way if you take those first steps and if you stay with it. Yes, there are going to be challenges, there are going to be obstacles, but you have to... You will overcome. You'll find a way to overcome the obstacles.
Right.
You know, kids in school, college students. You say, "Well, I don't think I can pass this course." You'll find a way.
Right.
I mean, there are tutors, there are helpers, there are other students who have taken the class, there are family members. You will find a way.
Right.
That's what you have to do. You don't let the fear become the obstacle that stops you.
Right. Right. And it will, if you work at it, you will meet those goals. Mm-hmm. But the fear of failure is a powerful fear. It is a very strong, and again, we teach this to our graduate students, we teach this to future therapists, we teach this to our patients, and yet we were struggling with ourselves just all the same.
And that's the message, that you are going to feel this, you're going to feel fear, you're going to be afraid. We all do.
Right.
But there are ways to overcome it.
Right, right. The second, the fear of success.
Yeah.
Now, it sounds silly, but it is absolutely mm-hmm. A fear that many people have. What do I do when I hit it big?
Right.
You know, there's a lot of people who don't have this fear that should. Mm-hmm. You know, think about, I think about this a lot of times with, you know, 22-year-old professional athletes. Mm-hmm. You know, they get out of college, straight out of college, and they go to the NFL or to the NBA, and they're making millions of dollars.
Right.
They're very successful, and now they're in the limelight. Who keeps them in check? And we see a lot of them. Sure, absolutely. A lot of these kids, there's perhaps some anxiety about success in there that keeps them in check. But a lot of these people just go out and, you know, they fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
But the fear of success, the way that it affects us is that it makes us hesitant. But not hesitant because we're worried about failure. Hesitant in the mindset that, how am I going to handle when this person starts to call, or how will I handle this type of project? Yes, I can handle these small companies or mm-hmm. these small clients here. But what am I going to do if this big client calls? Mm-hmm. So I'm not even going to reach out to them. I'm going to stay small.
That's
because
right.
even though that's where I want to be, I don't feel confident that I can handle that.
That's right, because once you start to become successful, you're going to get invitations to join civic organizations.
Right.
You're going to get invitations to be on church committees. You're going to get invitations to be more in the limelight. And once again, you're going to be taken out of your comfort zone.
Right.
You know, because of your success, you're going to be taken out of your comfort zone, and that's going to scare you some.
Right.
Okay? So yes, fear of success can be as debilitating as fear of failure.
Right. You know, one of the things that we, you know, when we teach graduate students, we work with them, and in every one of my classes, I always have my students do a presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And this is for counseling students. And I do that not because I like to see them squirm, because invariably, almost every student says, I have a hard time doing presentations.
Right.
I have that as a requirement in my class, because if you become the therapist that I feel like you can become, you're going to be asked to do public speaking, and that's going to improve increase your clientele. That's going to get you more exposure. That's going to help you professionally. And so you have to have that skill. And so, you know, the idea here is that you have to overcome that anxiety of, what if I become too big? And then how am I going to handle that? Because now I'm not just talking with a person one-on-one. Now there's a group of people who have expectations of me. And what if I don't make that? And then it goes back to the fear of failure. I've become successful, and now what happens if I fail?
Mm-hmm.
And so those two really go hand in hand.
Right.
So we have to battle through these anxieties, these fears that keep us from taking those first steps. And again, that the Steve Harvey video, he's talking about jumping. You just got to jump in.
Yeah, at some point, you just have to step off the cliff. You don't have to hurl yourself into an abyss.
Right.
And you have to be careful. I mean,
right.
you can't make unwise decisions. You know, when you and I went into practice, we didn't go out and borrow $50,000
right.
and put ourselves in a deep debt. We did it very carefully,
right.
very thoughtfully, so that we wouldn't accumulate a lot of debt. So yes, you have to be thoughtful.
Right.
But at some point, you have to take that step off the cliff.
Right.
I think of that scene from Indiana Jones where
yeah.
he was looking looking down into that thing, and he just had to have the faith that, you know, step off the cliff.
The leap of faith, yeah. And your mentioning of the abyss is a perfect segue to the next fear, and that's the fear of the unknown.
Oh.
You know, when you look over and you're looking over that cliff at the edge of the abyss, you know, sure, the abyss is scary, but what's scary is you don't have any idea how deep it is. And we see this in movies sometimes. You know, people are trying to escape some hostage situation or something, and they, you know, they look out the window and it's foggy or something, so they can't see the ground, and you know, they're hanging out the window preparing themselves and for the drop, and you know, it's 2 feet. You know, they were on the first floor all along. We have this anxiety of the unknown, but we're not going to know the unknown until we get there.
Right.
You know, we're not going to be able to, as much as we want to prepare for situations, we have to go into it knowing we can't prepare for everything. What makes a person successful, and we talk about this a lot with children, what makes us successful is grit. Mm-hmm. And grit is your ability to adapt and to manage tough situations and to think on your feet and to be able to create a plan when you need it. Now, that does not mean that it has to be just you. Surround yourself with other people. Richard and I and Dr. Suarez and Miss Cassie, we meet here in our office routinely to talk about how are we going to handle these situations, because I know that I don't have all of the answers. You know, from a business perspective, it may come down to I have to make that decision.
Right.
But I don't have all the answers, and I want guidance. I want some feedback. I want some input from those who I know have my best interest and my business's best interest, have all of this in mind. When I'm making decisions at home, again, you know, Richard's my best friend. I talk to Richard about decisions I'm trying to make at home because, you know, hey, man, am I thinking about this the right way? Because if I go this way, this could happen. If I go that way, something else could happen. And I'm not sure what's really going to happen. So we have to be able to consult with others because that fear of the unknown, you know, we may feel like we're going to be successful. We may not be worried about failure, but the what ifs. Mm-hmm. What if this happens? What if that happens? We have to battle that. You will battle that ongoing.
And it's the same thing. Yes, it's scary when you go to new places, but you will find a way. I mean, that's what you're saying, is you use the resources you have to find your way, and you will find the way through it. If you're starting a new business, going away to college, mm-hmm. You know, how frightening it is to go away to college,
right,
to be on your own for the first time. And yet, gradually, day by day, episode by episode, you will find a way to succeed.
Right.
Okay? And so, again, don't let not knowing, don't let the fear of the unknown stand in the way,
right,
of you moving toward your goals. You get to your goals.
Right.
Do it a small step at a time.
Right. Mm-hmm. Have you seen the movie The Martian yet?
No.
Yeah, we need to go.
I'm going to try to see that this weekend.
Yeah.
Is that on Netflix?
Not Netflix, no.
Where do I see it?
I'm not sure. I don't know if it's in Redbox yet. But the issue with what I loved about the movie The Martian is, and he finally sort of overtly says it at the end of the movie, but you sense it all along the way. And what it's all about is you just have to solve this problem and then solve the next problem. And then solve the next problem. Mm-hmm. You can't look and say, I have 30 problems that I have to solve.
And
that's overwhelming. It's paralyzing.
Right.
You have to solve it one problem at a time. And I like it because in the movie he says, you just got to do the math. You know, you use a scientific approach, do the math, and solve this problem. Mm-hmm. Once you solve that problem, then you go to the next problem. And if you solve enough problems, you succeed.
That's right. The movie Apollo 13 was about that. They kept encountering new problems, but one by one, they solved those new problems. They had never anticipated having these problems before.
Right.
But instead of, nobody panicked. Everybody kept a level head, and they solved those problems, although they had never been confronted by them before.
Right.
This was the first time these things had ever happened. They were able to solve them, but they solved them one at a time.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. And that comes with, that just comes with breathing. You know, what happens to us so many times in situations where we're presented with a problem is that we gasp. Mm-hmm. And forget to take the next breath.
Right, take the next breath.
And so we have to breathe. We have to just look at and analyze the problem and just see it. Don't see it as this is going to ruin me. We have to see it as this is just a problem that I have to solve.
It's another problem.
It's just a math problem.
Right.
And somebody wrote in the chat room, Dr. A.E. Steve. Which is Dr. Suarez, of course. And what she wrote in there, a very good strategy that she uses. And she says that, you know, when she's presented with some of these things, she likes to talk it out. She likes to talk out loud about it because that helps her problem solve it. When we keep all these things inside, you know, we tend to ruminate and go over these things over and over and over again. And it doesn't get us anywhere. We're just the hamster on the wheel. And we're just going around and around and around. And we don't solve anything that way. Mm-hmm. You know, we often feel like we have an idea what the answer is. But we begin to second guess and third guess and quadruple guess and continue to guess ourselves over and over and over again. But to take the time to talk about it. To just say it out loud. And I like what she said. Just say it out loud.
But she
even if you're by yourself.
But she brings up another good point. And thank you, Dr. Steve. That is, she has found the procedure, the tactic, the strategy that works best for her.
For her, right.
It's not that you don't encounter problems. It's that you have to learn what works for you
right.
to solve those problems. For her, it's talking it out. For another person, it might be go into your cave with a pad and a pencil
right.
and draw it out.
Right.
You kind of fall into that. You also right. do a lot of that, where some people find that it's better to be alone to work it out. Some want to talk it out. Some want to go for a walk and clear your
mm-hmm.
head.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the point is, rather than worrying about the fears, you have to find your ways of solving these problems.
Right.
You know, forget about the fear.
Right.
How do you solve these problems best? And that's what you're obligated to learn, is how do you solve problems rather than letting fear become an obstacle that keeps you in your comfort zone.
Exactly. And you know, so when we think about this fear of the unknown, you know, here's some very direct ways to help with that. You know, you sit down and when you're planning a goal or when you're outlining a change that you would like to make or you're trying to decide how you're going to become who you want to become, you know, it's great to sit down and consider as many as you can think of mm-hmm. the different possibilities. Well, if I do this, this could happen, that could happen, that could happen, or that could happen. Mm-hmm. If I make this decision, this, 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 or this could happen. How many, you know, again, thinking about us starting this practice, how many pads of paper did we go through just detailing all of the different possibilities?
Right.
And what you do when you can actually see it mm-hmm. or when you're talking it out, and as you said, you know, it has to be what works for you. As you lay all of that information out in front of you, what you find is that you cover most of the possibilities. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's still some unknown out there.
They're going to pop up.
And all you have to do in those situations, and I don't mean to minimize it in any way, but the thing to do in those situations is say, if what happens isn't among this hundreds of papers mm-hmm. that I have in front of me with mm-hmm. all these different possibilities, if it's not one of these, right. this is what I'm going to do.
Right.
And it's not a solution to the problem. It's I'm going to talk to Richard about it. Mm-hmm. And he and Dr. Suarez and Cassie and I, we will sit down and we will talk about how to figure out this problem. Mm-hmm. And if the five of us can't figure it out, we'll talk to somebody else, you know, a friend that's an attorney mm-hmm. or a friend that's an accountant right. or a friend who owns a business or a friend who doesn't work, is a stay-at-home mom right. or dad. I'm going to talk to them and see what they think mm-hmm. Just to get other people's perspectives, but have a plan for handling the unknown. we can't go into the unknown and just say, well, I don't, you know, it's unknown. I don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So we'll just see what happens. Mm-hmm. Well, that's going to increase your anxiety. That's going to increase your fear. And it's going to, as Dr. Suarez put, it will can make you almost paralyzed. It can prevent you from doing the things that you need to, that you know you need to be doing. So that's how we need to handle the unknown. A fourth fear that we have, and I think that this is one that ties in a little bit with some of the others, and that is the fear of ridicule, the fear of criticism, the fear of other people judging you.
Yeah, what are others going to say?
Right. And I know, again, this is therapy, right? So this is all private and confidential. I know that for me, that has been one of my anxieties in the past. Man, this really is turning into a therapy session. When I was an undergraduate, I hated writing. I was not a good writer. I was always a science and math kind of guy. I was not much of a writer. When I got into graduate school, of course, we had to do a ton of writing. I mean, I think every class there was at least a 20-page literature review or something like that that we had to write. And my graduate professors were not – most of them were not real kind in the way that they judged my writing. They said I wrote folksy.
That was delicate.
Was it? I was dancing a little bit there.
Delicate, yes.
They said I wrote folksy. And while we joked about that, and I know that, see, I told Richard that story a long time ago, and now every time I write something, he says it's a little folksy. But I think that it affected me, and it made it really difficult for me for a long time to feel any kind of confidence in what I wrote. And I know it used to drive Richard crazy because I would typically ask him to review something before I wrote it. Well, in 2012, I think it was, I got an invitation to start writing a weekly column in our local newspaper. Well, that puts my writing out there for a lot of other people to see. And talk about anxiety going up, because now I'm thinking, you know, not only are other people, popular sort of population community people, going to be reading it, but other psychologists are going to be reading it. And what if they disagree with me? What if I say something and they're like, dude, you're way off?
Right.
That was anxiety producing. And so, again, I kept asking other people to read my columns. I have to have two or three people read my, you know, 500-word column before I submitted it. And that fear of ridicule, the fear of being judged, the fear, the anxiety that comes of being anxious about what other people are going to think about what you're doing, it can really get in your way if you don't battle it. And, you know, I finally had gotten to the point where I now have worked to gain an appreciation of the differences in some of this stuff. I do write folksy, I think, but I write folksy because my goal is, and always has been, truthfully, to write to typical people. And I mean typical people meaning I'm not writing to a professional group. I'm not writing so that other psychologists can read my writing and they can understand all the jargon that I'm using and all that kind of stuff. I have very little to no interest in that. Mm-hmm. I like writing in ways that other people can understand what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And that is folksy. But I'm okay with that. And so I've worked to overcome that fear of ridicule. And the way that I did that was, I feel like we keep saying it, was I just did it.
Just do it.
You just have to do it. You know, Nike, that's a great slogan that Nike has. You just have to do it.
Well, and I think that just do it goes with another part of this. And now that we're at the ridicule, fear of ridicule, I think about all the students who sit in class and they would like to ask a question, but they're afraid of looking stupid.
Right.
You know, and at some point you just have to say, just ask the question.
Right.
You know, forget about what everybody else is thinking. Forget about looking stupid. Live your life. Ask your questions. Do your things. And everything's going to be fine.
Right.
Everything will work out. You can't let somebody else or what you think. Because as we are often told by our teachers, if you have the question, chances are there are other people in the class who have the same question.
Right.
And the teacher was right.
Right.
You know, there are other students.
Right.
But everybody's afraid to say anything.
Yeah.
Everybody's afraid to say anything. And you just can't, again, what are we saying today? You can't let fear get in the way.
Right. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Don't let fear determine what you're going to do or say.
Well, and you know, and again, kind of going back to our story, when, you know, over the course of the 14, well, it took 12 years for us to start the practice. Over the course of those 12 years, how many of our students that we taught in graduate school, how many of our students started to practice before we did?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Because they didn't have that fear. They just did it.
Just went and did it.
And they became successful, and they did a very nice job. But they didn't let that fear, you know, they didn't let the fear of ridicule that somebody's going to say, you know, what do you know? You're 1 year out of graduate school.
Right.
What do you know starting your own practice? Mm-hmm. They didn't let that kind of fear get in the way to stop them from their goals. So I think that overcoming that fear of ridicule is challenging, but it's crucial, especially if you're going to have a job or you're wanting to do make a change or set goals that's going to be seen or influenced by other people. We have to overcome that fear of ridicule. Mm-hmm. And the last one is the fear of change.
Fear of change, right.
And we saved that one for last for a particular reason. That is a big, big fear. And we fear change for many of these reasons that we already talked about: fear of failure, fear of success, fear of the unknown, fear of ridicule. But we also just fear the idea of change itself. Mm-hmm. Change in and of itself,
yeah.
We're not comfortable with different.
Well, we mentioned this last night when we talked about ADHD. We like routines. The brain gets good at what it does repeatedly. So if you've been doing something the same way for 5 years or 8 years or 12 years, you're going to like where you are. Your brain is going to like. That's why you keep doing it, because
right.
Your brain is satisfied with whatever you're doing. And so changing anything, we know, is a difficult process.
Right.
Even when change is for the better.
Right.
You know, it's a difficult process.
Yeah.
Normally, we have to be scared straight or scared into doing something typically by our doctor.
Right.
You know, who says, well, if you don't do this, you're going to die. So that's motivation.
Yeah.
And so, but it's still difficult.
Even
with that hanging over your head, that sword hanging over your head, it's still difficult. We don't change easily. People talk about the brain being plastic and you can change the brain. Yeah, you can change it, but it's going to take a long time and a lot of work over many, many, many days, weeks,
right.
and months to change the brain. Yeah, you can change it, but it's going to take a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it's work. It's
right.
effortful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you said this early on today, is that we can't just rely completely on willpower.
No.
We have mm-hmm. to develop a plan for dealing with this fear of change,
right.
because, you know, we become comfortable.
That's right.
You know, this is a story that you like. I think of my pa, and my pa, you know, he passed away a few years ago, and you know, you miss him a lot. But he was so funny, because his physician told him, you know, you have diabetes, you have to stop eating this stuff. And, you know, of course, my grandmother, Nanny, you know, she keeps, you know,
baking pies.
it was always there.
That's right.
You know, but for Pa to deal with that, you know, what he would do, he would sit there, and while he's eating a pie or a cake or something, you know, he'd have his old man white t-shirt on, and he'd get his insulin syringe out and just give himself a shot right through his t-shirt,
man.
So that he could just keep going. And, you know, and part of it can make you frustrated, because, you know, you want to say, Pa, that's, you can't do that, man.
Right.
You got to make this change. But he couldn't. I don't know that his was afraid of change. It was just that it was just so ingrained in who he was that this is just what we eat. This is just what we do.
How old was he when he was doing that? 70s?
Yeah, he was.
Imagine 60s. This guy. He's been eating pies for 50 years. If your brain does something for 50 years, I want to tell you, it is going to be a job to change that.
Yeah.
50 years of brain pathways is going to be an enormous climb for anybody.
Absolutely.
Okay? It is. What we're saying is it's difficult. We acknowledge it is really difficult. It is the way we're built.
Right.
Our species just works this way.
Right.
Can't help it.
Right.
It's not you. It's not your weakness. It's not your willpower. It's not a deficit. This is just the way we're built.
Right. Our bodies, our brains, our who we are, seeks to find routine.
That's right.
And it wants routine. It's comfortable with routine. And even the most spontaneous person still has routine.
That's right.
And so, you know, they add some spontaneity to spice things up a little bit.
And when do you get out of your routine? When you take a chemical substance.
Right.
You know, when you lose your inhibition and you kind of lose who you are, then you get out of your routine. But you have to chemically enhance that change.
Right.
Okay? And then you act a little bit weird.
Yeah.
But you normally, when you're sober, you're going to go back to
your
routine.
Right. Right. And so the fear of change is related to the fear of the unknown, what's going to happen. But of all of the ones we've talked about, the fear of change really is a battle against your biology.
It really is. Yeah.
You know, your biology wants to keep doing what it's doing.
It's going
to
pull you back to where you were.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so you have to make cognizant decisions to say, I'm going to stop doing this we'll talk about this next week with the stop go. I'm going to stop this by replacing it with that.
That's right.
Because it's so much easier to start a new behavior than it is to stop an old behavior.
That's right.
Our brains are just wired that way.
Yeah, 30% of your brain is seeking pleasure. I mean, most of your brain is out there looking for ways to make it feel good.
Right.
And whatever makes it feel good is what you're going to do. So last week we talked about happiness, and that's what we were talking about. We're talking about that contentment, that 30% of your brain feeling satisfied at any moment. And what we're saying is with fear is that because of the way our brains work, you're always going to be confronted with these fears. I mean, we all are, okay? But it is possible to overcome them. Not easy to overcome.
Right.
It's possible to overcome them. But it does take effort. This has to be an effort.
Right.
What Dr. Burney just said is, it's just a lot easier to start a new behavior that you want rather than stopping an old behavior that you don't want.
Right.
Okay, so if you're going to put the effort into starting the new behavior rather than fighting the old behavior.
Right.
Okay?
And you do that with mutually exclusive behaviors.
Right. That's right. That's
you
right.
can't. I had a one of my professors in graduate school. He said, you know, it's really hard to be depressed
if you're happy.
If you're happy.
I don't think I'm betraying any confidences here, but I had a friend in college. He decided he was drinking way too much beer. Bottles and bottles and bottles of beer a day.
Oh,
so he switched to Manhattans. You know, that's not the positive opposite that
right.
we talk about, you know, because then he started drinking too much whiskey. So he replaced one alcoholic beverage with another. And we said, I don't think that's what we mean by the positive opposite.
That's not exactly
that's not what we had in mind.
Helpful.
Right.
But maybe getting rid of the barley.
I don't know. There's a lot of wheat in the whiskey that he was drinking.
True.
But that's what you were saying is you can't just replace it with the same thing.
Right, the same type of stuff. Right.
I'm going to quit doing Coke and start doing Xanax. You know, I mean, just that's not how you do this.
Right. I'm not going to eat ice cream anymore.
Right.
I'm just going to eat cupcakes.
Yeah, right.
You know,
I'm going to switch out.
Right. So as we're wrapping up today, forget to be afraid. I think I'm going to start ending every podcast with just that reminder.
Yeah.
Just forget
to
be afraid.
Do
work in the direction that's going to make you happy. If you didn't listen to episode 37, go back and listen to the episode on happiness, because we talk very specifically about, you know, making the decisions to do the things that make you happy. That's the key. You know, it doesn't matter how much money you make. It doesn't matter where you work or what you do for a living.
Mm-hmm.
It's the decisions that you make that lead to happiness. Right. And we present some research there in that episode. So forgetting to be afraid, working in the direction of happiness, mm-hmm. Forgetting the fear of failure, forgetting the fear of success, forgetting the fear of the unknown, mm-hmm. Forgetting the fear of ridicule. Dr. Steve, in the chat room, she said that, again, another great point. We need her to be here with us.
I think she should join us. There's a chair here. They've got a big S on it.
And it says, her comment says, more than any of us realize, we all have these insecurities.
That's right.
Even those people who appear so very confident.
Exactly.
And it's absolutely true. She's spot on that, you know, even the most confident people have those same insecurities. Mm-hmm. You know, whether we think about actors or we think about really successful businessmen.
Athletes.
You know. They all have these insecurities. Right. And so we're no different. The main difference is, there's no difference in it as it relates to those insecurities. The main difference is your ability to overcome it and to just do it anyways.
Again, and we've said this before, it's not what happens. It's how you deal with what happens.
Right. And then, of course, forgetting the fear of change.
Yeah.
Change can be a refreshing, wonderful, nice mm-hmm. thing. Mm-hmm. Miss Cassie came in the office yesterday. She's not, I don't think she's listening right now, but she'll listen to the podcast later. She came in the office yesterday and she goes, I've got to rearrange my room. She's like, it's been the same for too long. Which has only been since a couple months ago. But she wanted to change it. She needed the change.
Right.
And I think that, I teased her about it. But it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. You know, embrace change. Change can be a great thing. Change your wardrobe. You know, start dressing differently. I started wearing bow ties a couple of years ago. And, you know, that just became my thing. You know, make these little changes to move closer to who you want to be. And you will find so much more happiness. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You will get to where you want to be and right. you will be happy.
Accomplish your goals, become who you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
So, all right. Quick announcement. I mentioned it already, but next Thursday night, January 21st, we are doing a workshop here in our office. It's called Creating Motivation. Mm-hmm. Richard, I am so excited about that workshop because it's just a 2-hour long workshop. Probably could be a 4-hour long workshop. All about how to create motivation. It, you know, we treat it like it's a mystery, but I think that we can teach you and help you understand how to make motivation. Intrinsic motivation.
For yourselves and for your children.
For yourself and for your children.
Right.
So that's next Thursday night. If you want any more information on it, you can go to our website. It's PACFlorida, PACFLORIDA.com. Click on the workshops tab, and all the information will be there. You can register online there. Or you can just call the office. 863-644-8470 is the office number. Talk to Diane, and she will help get you all the information and make sure that you're here and ready to go. It's going to be great. I'm really excited about it. We're also working on a couple more workshops over the next couple of months. Mm-hmm. We're trying to set up a big workshop here in the Polk County, Central Florida area for parents and educators on a variety of topics, and so we're contacting some different people about that. So we'll let you know as those decisions are made, because we really last night's workshop over in Lake Wales really went well and really pushed us into the understanding. We gotta do this more. The podcast is great. We love that you guys listen to the podcast. We just want to do more. Mm-hmm. I always want to do more, though. That's nothing new for me. So check out the website. You can get information about the workshops. Check out the website also, because you can get our newsletter. Mm-hmm. I think we're the January newsletter isn't out yet. Should be out soon, and so that'll be available to you. And that will always have some upcoming information in it as well. So, all right.
Friday.
Facebook. Make sure you check us out on iTunes. Oh, we got 40 seconds left. We've received two comments on iTunes from two people. Thank you so much for doing that. Last week we said that if you wrote a comment by this Friday, we would send you a free copy of the Elimination Diet Manual. I am so excited about sending that out, except I have no idea how to contact you based upon your comments. I can click on it and it just shows me other comments that you made. So email me or send me actually probably the easiest thing is to send me a message through Facebook at The Mental Breakdown on Facebook. So, and I'll get it to you, I promise. If you haven't already, please write a review or rate us on iTunes. That'd be great. So, until next week, I'm Dr. Bernie.
I'm Dr. Richard.
Have a great week and forget to be afraid.